Oh, great. My dog is being...
Oh.
Noisy.
What's up, Fido? What? What's that, boy? Paul's hurt? Do you know where he's at?
I'm not stuck under the train anymore. I didn't even fall down a well. It's okay.
Come on, boy. Show us where Paul is.
Hi, my name's Alan McNish, and this is FormulaOneBlog.com.
I'm David Hobbs, and this is FormulaOneBlog.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Matchett, and you're listening to FormulaOneBlog.com.
You're listening to the audio journal of F1 Opinion, FormulaOneBlog.com podcast.
Didn't you, Ralph, about overtaking Damon? You heard that, didn't you?
Giancarlo, 3 laps to pit stop, 3 laps. Got to push hard now.
Get that, Ralph. Did you hear me?
Michael is on. You're leading the race.
Ralph, acknowledge.
What up, Johnny? What up? Just about under braking at club.
Ralph, acknowledge.
Is Schumacher going to start from here or from the pillow? No start. Hi, hi.
Please keep calm.
I am so annoyed.
Fantastic! Absolutely incredible!
His behaviour coming into the garage and accusing me of trying to effing kill him is just unacceptable.
Hello everybody, this is Paul Charlesley, the International. And before we get to the show, just a couple of quick words on CarbonFit USA, our official sponsor. A friend of mine came up with a patented process of turning that carbon fiber material you'd normally see on our favorite race cars into fashionable apparel, from baseball hats to fedoras to cowboy hats, belts and wallets, and my personal favorite, the padded carbon fiber gun case, the gift that just keeps on giving. And the good news is that if you check out the website, carbonfitusa.com, and use the FBC letters, you'll actually also receive a 20% discount on anything on there. So a considerable savings, maybe allowing you to buy Christmas presents for grandpa, the wife, and the kids. So make sure you go to carbonfitusa.com, check out all the cool stuff, and now it's time to get to the show.
Get to the show!
This is the show!
Hello, and thank you for joining me at FormulaOneBlog.com for podcast number 485. This is Todd, a.k.a. Negative Camber. Yep.
No, Todd, not now.
That's it. And guess what? This weekend we're doing the German Grand Prix review, because that's what we do after a race. And we're going to cover, well, we're not going to cover them as they finish, folks. That's not how we're going to cover them. Because if you have been keeping track and paying attention, we normally cover them as they finish. But the last week, we reversed the grid, right? You know, everybody's talking about we should reverse grids. So we reversed the grid. This week, it's the other idea in Formula One, which is completely random. Picking a number out of Charlie Whiting's hat, that's how we're covering them this weekend. So, for your kind consideration tonight, we're going to cover the German Grand Prix in completely random order. However, before covering the race, I have to bring in my guest tonight, which of course means... That's right. I have to bring in my guest from the left coast of America, nestled in the rolling hills of Sonoma. He's a professional race car driver who spends his days drinking fine wine, eating really good cheese, making beer, and driving cars really fast. But he doesn't do that all at the same time. You know him as the International. I'm on a first-name basis with him. I call him Paul Charlesley. Paul, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Yes, no, I don't do all that at the same time, although I have been known to eat cheese and drive fast.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, what kind of cheese? What's your favorite cheese, Paul?
Oh, my favorite cheese. Oh, man, that is a really good question.
Roquefort?
No, I like, what is it, the fog cheese? It has the ashes from a volcano in it. I can't remember what the name is here right now.
Oh, gee, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's pretty delicious, you know.
It's a little gamey.
But yeah, I like a lot of cheese, that's for sure.
Lots I do too. I'm kind of a cheeseaholic, I don't mind telling you.
Yeah, it's tough.
There you go.
It's tough to put the, you know, spread the stuff on the cracker and everything while you're driving fast. So I tend to bring, you know, some more solid cheddar or something that you can just kind of throw in there.
Yeah, individual slices of American.
Yeah, yum.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. I'm with you.
Yes, yes.
Oh, Paul, what are you imbibing for the podcast tonight, man?
Well, tonight I've moved on to another beer from Eastern Shore Brewing Company. So now I'm on to what is known as the Duck Duck Goose Porter, and it is exceptional, actually.
Is it? Really?
Yes. It's very approachable, as they say, but it does have a little coffee, little chocolate in it. It's really, really nice. Yeah.
Wow.
Not too carbonated, so it's nice.
An approachable beer.
An approachable beer, unlike a Rono, which should be, you know.
Really?
Beaten up and left by the roadside.
Who's making this crap up, Paul? Come on, man. It's busy, but never precocious. It's an approachable beer. Okay. It's a beer.
Even you can drink it.
Yeah. So, Foster's, Australian for beer. So, Paul, did you manage to get, speaking of beer, huh?
What?
The German Grand Prix.
Oh, right.
That's where, you know, thick brown ale is drank.
Yeah, you know, German beer, I'm not super big fan, actually. But
no Volsteiner? What?
I used to like Volsteiner, yeah. I just kind of moved. I progressed from there, you know. So,
as one does.
Yeah, but yeah. Hey, you can't. No one can beat a German at drinking beer. That's for sure.
No. Yeah, that's no way.
Never ever get into a drinking contest with a German. I promise you, it is never going to.
Thick neck German named Gunther.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Absolute pros.
Oh my, Paul. We're going to talk about the German Grand Prix, you know, because that's what we do, and I happen to watch it. I was out of town this weekend, don't mind telling you that, and I still managed to squeeze the qualifying and the race in. So I have copious notes, and I am going to cover those notes, Paul.
I was out of town, too. I was in Chicago doing some stuff for the Audi R8, but I rushed back just in time to see the race.
So. And you gave a big presentation to Audi, and I have a little clip of it. Here it is.
Aerodynamics come in at any speed.
Ford, I think, have done such a good job on the tempo. It's a great car.
We'll do it live!
There you go.
That's true. I did mention the tempo in the Audi presentation.
Perfect. Perfect. You know, this R8 reminds me of the unique stylings of the tempo.
Yes. See how the rear deck leads into the carbon fiber rear spoiler? Very tempo-like.
Yeah. Very tempo-like. Oh, my. Yes. Well, let's talk about the German Grand Prix this weekend. An interesting shoe. Oh, speaking of, we are doing the complete random grid today on the show as we cover in complete random order of how they finished. Because we did reverse grids last week, and apparently that didn't, quote, spice up the show enough. So we're going to really spice it up with a completely random. But before we get to the race, we do normally talk about qualifying. Qualifying, Hülkenberg, Paul, penalized for improper tire use.
Oh, improper tire, what would you call it? Strategy. I don't know what was that team all about? They handed the wrong tires back into the FIA. So Hülkenberg didn't actually do it. He wasn't, like, you know, having the tires on his back and pulling them into Parc Fermé. It was actually the team that screwed
him up. You know, what did they nick a set of tires from somebody else and grind off the serial numbers? What'd they do?
I don't know. It was the tire he'd used, and they handed in the wrong tire. I'm not sure how that got mixed up, but someone's gonna have to pay,
and it's gonna be the Hulk.
Yep, one place on the grid.
Yeah. See, here's my thinking, really. If it's a one-place grid penalty, I mean, that doesn't add a lot of gravity to the offense. At this point, why are we mixing up grids if it's just a one? It just fine them 10 billion euros or whatever you guys do and let it go. It's a team issue. It wasn't Hulk's fault. And now we have a jumbled grid, and we thought we knew what we had Saturday, but no, we don't know what we have Saturday, and now the Hulk is back a spot. It's not that I'm that upset about it, but I'm just thinking it's kind of goofy, you know? We're just fine. Yeah. That's what they do in NASCAR.
That's right. You still get to keep your win even if you're completely illegal.
Yeah, they just fine him $100,000 and, you know, there you go. Or yep. It's what they used to do in Formula One back in the, you know, technical manual gate.
Nice, Ron.
You know, fine him $100 million. So anyway, he gets that one place grid penalty. Regardless, Nico Rosberg sets pole, Paul, but he did it in one lap.
It was a nice lap, too.
Yeah, it was. He went out on his penultimate lap, had an electronic glitch, folks, had to abort the lap. He said the throttle just quit working, and he coasted in the pit, went down the pit. They rectified it, and by this time, Lewis had already went out, set a lap, as you normally would. So did the rest of the top 10 drivers. So then when Nico, you know, what he had, what a handful, 3 minutes and change or something, went out, he was going to get one shot at it, boom, went out and set pole.
Yeah, it was. Well, he'd had a really good weekend to this point. I think, you know, his confidence was brimming, you know, even when that did, I don't think it fazed him, and he figured he had it all in hand, and he did. It was a really, really impressive lap for sure. I mean, you couldn't fault anything he did on that lap very much.
Yeah, you couldn't. Lewis was just a tenth behind him. But Lewis is really befuddled on the thing. I wrote an editorial piece. He did an interview, and he was having a little bit of a, you know, I said, mind the eggshells. Lewis didn't get pole. You know, he was a little grumpy, you know, as Lewis can be. I'm just saying, you know, if he didn't win in her pole, he gets a little grumpy. And he was saying,
I didn't look up. What are you talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about. What? Yeah. And then in the interview he did, he used the word quickest. He goes, yeah, I don't understand. Cause I went into qualifying. I was quickest. It was like, okay. The only thing that would have been better if he just stamped his feet. Quickest. But anyway, that was, I'm sure if I heard the interview or saw it, it wouldn't translate as poorly as it did in written word. But regardless, he was a little befuddled by that because I think Lewis thought he had the measure of him. I guess the other big story coming out of this is really nose to tail, Daniel Ricciardo third, Max Verstappen fourth, followed by both Ferraris. And here again, Paul, you know, we looked at Austria, thought Ferrari, you know, was hopefully clawing some, and then we went into Austria thinking, wait a minute, guys, I think the real battle is between Ferrari and Red Bull at this point, and whether Ferrari can keep Red Bull behind him. And here we go, Germany, home Grand Prix for Sebastian Vettel, bested by both Red Bulls. A great performance by the Red Bulls.
Yeah, definitely. I expected it to be flipped there, coming off the last race where Ferrari seemed to have the hand on Red Bull. So I definitely thought with this track being more handy for the power, that would still give Ferrari even more advantage, but it did not. I mean, the Red Bulls just keep pushing and keep surging. Pretty amazing stuff by those guys. And even Kimi out-qualified Vettel this time, which is unusual, obviously.
Yeah, and Seb said that on his side of the garage, they just got the car set up wrong on qualifying. That it was really honestly as simple as that. We just went the wrong direction with it and got it set up wrong, and that's what cost me. Also, heading into this weekend, some of the controversy, as you might say, Paul, being English, was once again all the talk about the double yellow flags, right?
Right. Well, that and 50 other things.
Yes. Well, yeah, that and 50, and I'll get to those. The double yellow flags, Charlie said, all right, well, whatevs. Next time there's a double yellow, I'm just going to wave a red, screw you all.
Right. That seems their attitude with every rule that people were whining about, really, wasn't it?
I know, it was. And then you remember last year, everybody was up in arms over the radio coaching. Okay, fine, I'll just ban all radio. Done. It's like, okay, is there a happy medium, Charlie? I'm just asking. You know, I don't know.
A little forethought, you know, before you guys just arbitrarily just throw your hands in the air and walk out and say, fine. You like this.
Yeah. Serious. Yeah. I mean, I hope nobody goes to him and says, Charlie, these tires they just suck. Okay, fine. Banning the tires. No tires.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. So anyway, yeah, that was his solution for that. And then also, what did we hear more about? All we hear is Radio Gaga. You got it. The radio ban. And except instead of saying, okay, fine, we're going to take these six things off of our comprehensive list right out of the draconian handbook of how to run a racing series. We're going to take that out and this out and that. Nope. He just said, fine. You can just say whatever you want. I don't care.
Yeah. Swear. Do whatever.
Yeah. swear, share recipes. I don't care. You know? So then we went back to break now. Switch, shift now, you know. Now we're back to this, right? Thanks.
That's unbelievable. It's such an immature approach to how they run the series. It's driving me insane. I don't understand it.
I really don't. I don't get it either. I mean, look, it's easy to say if there's a technical, and I understand it's an insurmountable task to try to just, you know, it would be weird because if you said, okay, fine, you can tell them about troubles with the car, you know, and then, okay, so all of a sudden, instead of telling Jensen Button that not to shift through eighth, you know, Jensen, you know, you're going to need to put it in strat 9. Well, his car only goes to strat 8, so he knows that strat 9 means something else, you know. And I get it, trying to figure out what all this stuff, I know it's hard, but wow.
Yeah, as I keep saying, it's like take all those adjustments away in the cockpit so there's little for them to talk about except the stuff that seems reasonable to talk about. But,
yeah, right.
You know, having someone monitor everyone's every single word is just ridiculous.
Yeah, that's tough. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing we didn't like was literally the coaching of the drivers or the passing on information. Certainly, a Mercedes part point of view was, you know, where they pass information of settings and how the opposing driver in their team was doing things. And
well, that's just it. And we all sit here, you know, Mercedes, well, those radio bands. Well, you're the reason we did it.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember a year ago, go back and Google some of the stories from a year ago about this radio band. You'll see all the reasons. And the teams were saying, yeah, we got to get this coaching thing out. Because quite literally, Paul, if you were Lewis and I was Nico, they would come on and tell you, okay, Lewis, Nico's a little quicker in sector 2. He's breaking about 100 meters or 50 meters before you are in that sector. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, well, okay, so now we're just micromanaging Lewis's driving and Nico's driving. And that's not what we want.
No. I mean, I think it should be strategy calls. And, you know, if there's an issue with the car, how to fix it, but definitely not relaying information from one teammate to the other. It was horrible. And then track limits came up too, right?
Yep. And then we have the white lines and we got the track limits, right? And so they went back and forth. So Charlie was like, oh, well, we're going to be all over, you know, we're going to be on you guys like a herd of turtles on this thing. And then Bernie and the team said, okay, well, screw that. And they went and got together with Bernie and said, Bernie, wait a minute. You know, Charlie's going to be all over this. This is silly with this white line. Thing's got to go. And then Bernie talked to Charlie and said, hey, you need to really lax up on this thing, man. Just let it go. Let him race. And then they decided, Bernie came out the press and said, yep, we're not going to do the white line thing. And we're going to lighten up on that whole deal. And then Charlie doubled down the night before and said, nope. Turn one, you go all four off, it's discounted, you know. Then he was doubling down on this, and he said, no, that's silly. And I believe even NBC said, I think, was it Steve Matchett or somebody said, you've got to ask, where is Jean Todt in all of this?
Right? Yeah.
And then I think either Will Buxton or somebody said, well, actually, I think that Charlie's reversal the night before was Jean Todt saying, no, that's BS. We are going to manage those track limits. And they put their foot back down on turn one. So I don't know. It's you getting all this at home?
Yeah. And this is a $1 billion racing series, folks. Right. This is not, you know, the ice cream shop down the road. It's insane.
I mean, let's be honest. Your local SCCA race, you know, would have figured this out.
Yeah. Well, they don't change the rules for 50 years. So, yes, everyone knows where they are. But
wait, you can bump draft?
Okay. You bump draft. You must have a handkerchief over your mouth to stop the soot from the forward car getting into you. But so it's bizarre to me. They look so amateurish. I mean, can you believe the people that are investing in this series and they're looking at this going on, that they're so reactionary and they really don't think about anything clearly?
Yeah, that's always been my criticism for years now, is that they always go for pragmatism over prudence. They, instead of being prudent, measured in their response and what they do, they always knee-jerk pragmatism. And, I'm not a big fan of pragmatism at all. And so that's what they do. And this is what you got. this is exactly what you get. You know, okay, well, fine. Now we've solved the radio issue. Now they can tell Jensen what's wrong with his car or Sergio. Okay, but they can also now go back to coaching and telling, you know, Nico how to beat Lewis and where, you know, and that's not what we wanted either, you know. Now, come on, damn it, decolonize your head and have a measured response on this, but they haven't yet, so.
Yep, and now no halos. We're going to have halos. No, we're not.
Yeah, yeah. God, we're going to have halos. Yes. What are you, against safety?
Yeah. Well, we are, because we're not going to have halos.
Yeah, we're not going to have halos until 2018. So there you go. Woo, did you get all that? So anyway, Kimi Raikkonen fifth, qualified fifth. Sebastian Vettel sixth. You had Nico Hülkenberg, good qualifying, seventh. Ultimately, he started in eighth. Bottas was originally qualified eighth. Sergio Perez, both Force Indias in the top 10 of qualifying, followed by the wily Brazilian veteran Felipe Massa in P10. So both Williams, you know, feeling a little pressure from the boys at Force India. Qualified top 10, so do both Force Indias. And that's your top 10. Okay, so Paul, let's talk about the race, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, we're talking about the race now. For those of you keeping score or playing at home, it was a dry race all the way. I mean, there was a few raindrops at the very end, but it was a dry race, partly cloudy. The race won by Lewis Hamilton in first, finished 6.9 seconds ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, followed by Max Verstappen, the plucky team. That's your podium, Paul. Let's get in team by team. We're going to start this evening with Manor Racing. And we're going to start with Pascal Wehrlein, P17, Rio Harianto, P20. Rio and Pascal, Paul, had a little bit of a moment, didn't they? They had a little coming together there at the beginning of the race, and they both made it through okay, but Rio lost a big chunk of his front wing out of that collision. That had to have Dave Ryan and the boys down at Manor a little red. So, he lost a chunk of his wing. Anyway, Pascal managed to stay ahead of the Sauber of Marcus Ericsson and the Renault of Julian Palmer, as well as his teammate, finished P17. Rio managed to race in Germany, Paul, despite the rumors of his being out of cash for the ride, and it remains to be seen if he will return at the end of this summer break. But that's where they finish. I do think you got to be a little hats off here to Pascal. He had a pretty good race, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, he always puts in a good effort. A little rude for Rio to run into him, especially seeing as he's in this race on a wing and a prayer. But what can you say? They're still struggling a bit for pace, and Pascal still overachieves in the car that he's got there. I'm sure he's chomping a little bit to move on elsewhere. But
move him to Williams.
Williams or Mercedes?
Williams.
Okay, I have to shuffle my papers. Is that what you're telling me? Okay.
No. I'm saying move Pascal to Williams next year.
Oh, right. Yes. Sorry. I was picking up on that. Too much porter, evidently.
Definitely. Yeah, so, anyway, it's a good result from Pascal. I thought it was a good performance, all things given, for him and the team. Next, let's talk about Mercedes, shall we? The race winners. You had Lewis Hamilton, P1, Nico Rosberg back in P4. Hamilton had a very good start and launched his way around the pole sitter Nico Rosberg for at the first turn, and really ultimately didn't look back. I mean, he checked out at that point and didn't really slow down until he hit the checkered flag. He ran away with it. It was a comprehensive, a great race from Lewis, a great performance. Nico had a really bad start, and when I was out of town, I didn't have a DVR, so I couldn't go back and rewind, but could you see, Paul, was Nico's issue wheel spin, or did it bog down?
Yeah, it was definitely a bit of wheel spin, because you see him do a little correction there when he was going up through the gears. Why that was, I don't know. I read something like they said his clutch over engaged, which actually I have no idea what that means, but evidently, I don't know if it was driver induced or just a technical deal that caused the wheel spin as you're going up there, but one of the lower gears, he definitely got a little had to do a little twitch on the wheel. He's got a little wheel spin, and then basically the world went by him. It's tough to say, you know. It's like, you know, we're talking about everyone trying to find better starts and this and that, and I was thinking about it today. You know, with as much technology as going into the starting procedure, you know, is it really the driver's fault? I don't know. There's so many different things that have to happen. And is it that you didn't flick a switch one way rather than the other? I don't know. I mean, it's tough to, in my view, to be hard on any of these guys when they get a bad start because, you know, there's so much technology in it. It's not just like, oh, well, you know, next time you got to learn to come off that clutch pedal easier, you know. But it's not – it's so much more complicated than that. And, you know, they always say, oh, I've got to go back and analyze it through the tech, you know, with the engineers and everything to try and figure it out. So for whatever reason, anyway, Nico got a little wheel spin. He got a decent-ish launch, but then it all just went horribly wrong after that.
Yeah, and it's a good point because I honestly don't know. I mean, for all we know, Paul, this could be like a PlayStation, like the ultimate move. Like, no, Nico, it's X, square, Y, or triangle, triangle, square, 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 X. That's right. How you do it. Oh, okay, so it's X, square, triangle. No, X, square, square, triangle, triangle, square, 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 X. Ah, okay. You know.
Right. And does that make you a bad driver or a good driver? No, right?
Yeah, so. Right. So, I mean, you know, but I'm assuming it's that second clutch paddle and when the, you know, getting the right bite points and where that's at. And obviously, you know, that it's all pretty complicated. You're right. You know, as a layman sitting at home, you know, I can make light of it. Say, boy, you know, Mark Webber just, you know, you just really cannot get a good start. Or Lewis struggled sort of at the beginning of the season. And you say, boy, you know, Lewis needs to spend some time on the sim, you know. But it's nowhere that easy. It really isn't.
You know? No, I mean, you know, and it's you know, a standing start is the most amazing thing to go through that a lot of people haven't been through. But, you know, your heart is beating. Everything is just at the maximum for that moment in time. And, you know, the red lights go out and just everything seems to slow down. And you just feel like the world's, you know, you're in slow motion, but it's not. And it's an intriguing moment in a race, really. So different from how the rest of the race goes.
You know, this is going to sound incredibly junior league of me, and I apologize to veteran listeners, but I've been for years now a little surprised that we don't have more false starts than we do in Formula One.
You mean people stalling now?
No, at the very beginning, people jumping the start.
Oh, right.
I'm just surprised we don't, you know, trying to anticipate those red lights and your heart, like you said, is just pounding and you're just, you know, everything is so tense. You know, you go to a track meet and my gosh, you have four, you know, false starts in a row, you know, or a swim meet. But when you go to Formula One, and we used to have jump starts, but but we just don't have them anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back at like some of the 70s races, they didn't even stop.
No, they just everybody kept going.
It was like rum, 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 and the cars are creeping. It's like, well, you didn't creep too much. You're all right.
Yeah.
That's very fine line there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean,
it's a good trivia question. I can't remember the last jump start we had in a Formula One race. But anyway, it's been a little while.
We kept parking in the wrong spot, but not necessarily jumping.
Yeah, we've got a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
So Nico had that bad start, had that wheel spin. He fell back down to fourth and then resorted to plan B. And that, obviously, that race strategy was slower. And then Nico's attempt to pass Max Verstappen was deemed too aggressive, and he was penalized 5 seconds for that incident. Which many believe was the mirror image of what happened in Austria with Lewis and the penalty, and then apparently a malfunctioning stopwatch.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. according to the team, ruined any chance he had of a podium. All right, Paul, let's unpack the incident and the penalty. Seems like an interesting pass. Paul, talk us through it.
Well, there you go. Yeah. It was interesting. I don't know if you listened to Five Live because Alan Manish had a different play on it just a little bit, saying Verstappen was moving in the braking zone. But I think that's all fine as far as I'm concerned, quite honestly. It wasn't a chop. It was a leaning into the turn just a little bit. But once again, it was a little bit of a clumsy maneuver. I mean, Rosberg was so close to making that a clean pass,
yeah.
But he just took it that one step too far. He just went too deep into the corner. I mean, obviously he said, well, I had all the lock in it. Well, here's the analysis of the corner. Could he have turned? So he's basically saying he couldn't have turned any earlier because he was heavy on, in the brakes. But when he did turn, it was a massive amount of steering input. So that tells you, obviously, that he still could have started turning into the corner, maybe not with a bit more progressive steering input, and still got away with it. But he didn't.
Okay, so
he chose
let me,
not to do that.
Let me stop you there, because for those of us at home that aren't professional drivers, if I go into a corner, Paul, and I'm going to outbrake Max on my left, and I'm going to come up on the inside of him, and I outbrake him, and I come hot into that corner and brake late, and I am heavy on those brakes, sir, and I come in, he was saying I had full brake lock at that point and couldn't turn, but you're saying technically, okay, yeah, you were under full lock, and no, you don't want to Felipe Massa that sucker and crank her all the way to the right, but you can start your progressive turn in even though you're heavy brake lock?
Yeah, I mean, he obviously wasn't at the maximum braking at the end of that braking zone because he was able to put so much input in right at the end, if that makes sense.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, right? gotcha. Yep.
So as the car slows down, you can progressively add a bit of steering input as you're coming off the brakes. Well, what happened was he just kept it straight and then and suddenly went, you know, like full lock right at the end, and the car actually responded to that. So that tells me that the car could have responded earlier in that braking zone to less input.
Yeah, gotcha.
But some input at least.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Because there's a relationship between steering angle and speed. So as his speed reduced, he could have started edging some of that steering input into the corner as it come off the brakes, which is naturally what you do in that corner and naturally what he did in that awesome qualifying lap.
Right.
If they could have showed, you know, how much his brake was releasing, you know, it's basically a part. One very key to getting a car to turn is how you come off the brakes and how you try and keep that load on the front tires as you're trying to get the car to rotate. But he didn't try to attempt that at all. And so he basically came up in a straight line, stopped, got the car turned, and then went off the other way. It was pretty obvious that was intended, but it wasn't necessary as far as I'm concerned. So, I mean, if he had just started putting a little input in just that little bit earlier and still given a width for Max on the outside,
I think he still would have had him.
I think he would have had him.
And I believe that in Austria too.
He would have got away without a penalty. But as I said, he's a little clumsy and he just goes that one little step too far. In my mind, he didn't need to do that at all because he had Max already. I mean, he was going to do him, you know. I mean, he had the advantage in pace at that point. He just needed to keep Max to the outside. He did not need to drive Max off the road. And by choosing to drive Max off the road, he got a penalty, which he didn't need to take.
Yeah, conceivably lost second place.
Yeah, I mean, they say it didn't matter, but it – you know, they say that the time lost in the pit stop when the stopwatch broke or whatever, that didn't matter either, but I really think it did.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, it was only 2 seconds behind Verstappen at the end there. So
Yeah, I agree.
It was clumsy, and I think, you know, it's in his head. He's psychological is a big part of it. He's now behind in the points in this race. He had a crappy start, and, you know, he's just not thinking very clearly. And unfortunately, I think this is his biggest thorn in his side, is these choices in racecraft.
I agree with you. I think these are the Achilles heel, the chink in the armor, if you will, for Nico.
Yeah.
It's these goofy moments like this that are, I don't know, momentary lapse of reason. I don't know what they are, but they do seem to crop up, you know, one could say that it's that increase of pressure and, you know, Lewis isn't lightening up on the head games at all, you know?
No.
So, I mean, you know, Lewis is, you know, and kudos to him, you know, that you got, you know, you beat him on and off the track, but, you know, I just wonder if that pressure, you know, isn't working on his racecraft there, but yeah, that's tough, man.
It's interesting to say about the head games, because I heard an interview with Nico and someone was asking about the head games that Lewis plays with him. And, you know, does he feel the need to do that? And he was like, oh, no, I would never do that. Why would I do that? You know, it's like, well, because you're losing.
Because it works.
Because it works. And the other thing, you know, obviously we've seen Lewis do similar things to what Nico's doing, but in a much more subtler way where he got away with it.
Yes.
You know, and but as I said, it's just a...
Yeah. Well, you think of like Canada this year, Austin last year, you know, those are a couple moments where Lewis kind of punted Nico wide, but it was more subtle. He had more turn, you know, he had more lock in and it wasn't quite as ham-fisted, if you will.
Right, right. I mean, it just wasn't as done as well as Lewis does it, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about the Bulls. Red Bull, Daniel Ricciardo, P2, Max Verstappen, P3. Ricciardo and Verstappen got around Rosberg at the start, and then Max put a move on Daniel. I want to get your impression of this. Everyone was talking about the Rosberg-Verstappen thing, but as soon as it happened, I was like, I was scratching my head, because recall that turn one was verboten. Charlie said, no, we're still measuring white lines and track limits, and turn one is verboten. Four wheels over, that's it. Well, the very first turn, Max put the move on Daniel Ricciardo by going off track at turn one, all four over the line, made the pass, came back on track and completed the pass of Ricciardo at that corner, and no stewards review, no nothing. Nobody says anything about it.
What, but was he over the white line? I don't remember him being.
Gosh,
I remember him
being. It
looked
like it
to me, but it looked like
maybe
to me
I could
he
be
was
wrong.
All the way up. I looked at it and it looked like he was all the way up to the where the curb completely ends. You know, they've got the beginning curb, the middle, medium curb, and then the edge curb. And it looked to me like Verstappen was right on that far left side, right at the edge where the curbing stops and the asphalt begins, and I think it was a legitimate pass.
Oh, okay.
I get what you're thinking.
I could be wrong because I didn't have a DVR, so I couldn't rewind it. But at the time, I was thinking, "Wow, I think he just went off track." You know.
Yeah.
But if you saw it, no, I'll take your word for it. I could be totally wrong on that one.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying, but I did look at it again, and it seemed like he was still within that initial boundary that they said was going to be the boundary. But in the end, I wasn't quite sure where the boundaries were. So
I think the boundary was back at Hungary. I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Something
okay.
Like that. Yeah.
Okay. So forget that then, because I didn't get to rewind it and look at it. Let's see. Ricciardo had his super softs were definitely hooked up, Paul. They were working really well and better than Max's. And they were on a split strategy, and the team asked Max to let him through. As he was, I kind of get the impression there again, I didn't get to rewind a bunch, but that it looked like to me that Ricciardo was marking Lewis and that Max was marking Nico. And they were on split strategies. And so Max said that he took one for the team. I let Ricciardo through. I took one for the team, making it known that he had passed Ricciardo and he was running second. It was Red Bull's first double podium of the season. And with that double podium, it moves them, Paul, ahead of Ferrari in the Constructors' Championship. Who'd have thunk?
Yeah, who would have thunk it? But, yeah, there was definitely a big pace difference between Ricciardo and Max in that stint. And, you know, he took one for the team fine. I mean, obviously the team is trying to beat Ferrari first. And that's what those guys are paid to do. So I don't think it was, you know, too much of a hardship for him, quite honestly. I mean, he just didn't have the pace. And that kind of changed the strategy anyway. And they had to have, because Ricciardo did have the pace, they had to, you know, send him on his way and have him chase Lewis. It was worth a go. So it was pace-based, not just them picking who they wanted to, finish in the second versus the third position. But one thing about this race was very clear was that a lot of the drivers out there were driving very, very carefully to manage their tire wear. That seemed like the biggest part of this weekend, which obviously they don't talk about much in the commentary during the races, because that would be, you know, pretty bore people to death, and they'd say, what the hell is this series anyway? But some of the in-car cameras on some of these guys, you saw that they were so far off what maximum pace should have been, purely to try and keep a good stint on the tires. It was pretty ridiculous, quite honestly.
It was the marbles were just massive.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm just talking about their pace. Yeah, the marbles were something offline, but I think fuel strategies and tire strategies and driving like 70% of what the car could be driven was pretty prevalent in this race. And
yeah,
was,
totally agree.
It was a little disappointing.
Totally agree. It was a lot of lift and coast and driving not at 100%, far away from it in some spots. Speaking of Ferrari, Kimi Raikkonen P6, Sebastian Vettel P5. Vettel managed to get past Raikkonen at the start, and then that was basically it for the rest of the race. Ferrari didn't have the pace to match the Red Bulls or Mercedes, but had pace in hand to keep the Force India's duo at bay. Vettel said they weren't there to run fifth and sixth. He feels like he knows what may be the issue moving forward. You got to think, Paul, if Sergio Marchionne was having a thrombosis before, he must be absolutely incandescent by now. But he's already fired everyone, hasn't he? I mean, is this draconian approach the best for Ferrari at this point? Is this what Vettel signed up for? I don't know. Tough situation.
Yeah, I mean, obviously James Allison's gone, and I heard the chief of aerodynamics is also gone, maybe going with James elsewhere. And we don't know.
Yeah.
Why or where he's gone, we can have our guesses that, you know, obviously his family situation would dictate he needs to not be in Italy and he needs to be in England somewhere, and that would be a big force behind it. And perhaps it was a mutual departure with James Allison having his family issues and Ferrari perhaps thinking they can do something else, but it doesn't seem like they have anyone to fill these voids right now. Yeah. And this is crucial going into 2017. I mean, it's insane that, you know, because of a couple of struggles, and we know James Allison with his family situation at the beginning of the year, you know, maybe he wasn't on the ball with the car and maybe that's where the team fell off, but there's no doubt that guy is exceptional. And it's not... Whatever's happening right now is not a good enough reason to get rid of James Allison. First off, you're going to let another team get James Allison. And second off, there really isn't anyone to take his place right now that would be available to help the 2017 car progress. So,
yeah, I think crazy. It's a tough situation. I mean, you look, hey, James's wife passed away. That's a trump card that trumps everything. And completely understandable. But I think you're right. And if they're losing their chief aero guy, that's brutal. And you got to think, well, what's Jock Clear thinking right now? I just got here, you know, and everybody's leaving. So, yeah, it's a tough situation with I don't know what will happen with Ferrari. You know, the first name jumps to my mind is go poach James Key. But but I'm sure he's got a contract. You know, I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, that will be interesting to see what happens. Let's talk about Sauber, Marcus Ericsson, P18, Felipe Nasr, DNF. Nasr had a terrific start, Paul. Moved up four places on the first lap. And then, if this isn't gutting enough, he was running pretty well, as high as I want to say around 16th. And that was unfortunate because then just a few laps left in the race, he parked it, had a DNF. So that was brutal for Nasr. And Ericsson, he failed to keep the Manor behind him and then finished towards the back of the pack. And that's not terrific given that Nasr was running as high as 16th. So, yeah, it was an unfortunate weekend for Sauber.
Well, you know, I don't know why you keep spouting about this Ericsson kid. Nasr's got it, man. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, my. You don't F with the Swede, man.
Yeah, well, evidently he's probably got some self-destruct button and he can take Nasr out whenever he wants to. But
no, but the new owners are really tied to his sponsors. So, you know, he's got his feet on the desk over there, man.
Yes, he does. But, yeah, it's tough deal for Sauber that they've got to start turning around.
They got to look at next year, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
At this point, you just got to look. Got new resources, new owners. We got to look at next year.
But they really need points, right? I mean,
they do need points, yeah.
Manor have points, and Sauber do not. I mean, if Sauber fall out of the top 10, that can really affect their income as well.
Yeah. So
they still need to fight to try and get in the points somehow. They really do.
They need a point, for sure. Force India, speaking of points, doing really well. Sergio Perez, P10. Nico Hülkenberg, P7. Perez had a terrible start, dropped him all the way down to 16th. And then he fought back to claim the final point after passing Alonso in the waning laps of the race to come back and finish P10. Hülkenberg made the best of it, that good qualifying effort he had. He made the best of it, turned it into a relatively quiet race for him, but yet another double points finish for the team. That draws them to within striking distance of Williams for fourth in the Constructors' Championship, Paul. That's actually a very big target for this team to be shooting for.
It really is. It's funny how you see all these teams talking about each other right now, and definitely the Force India team are just coming on strong, and that would be nothing. A couple of podcasts ago, I said, well, Williams have nothing right now. They can't go forward, and no one's going to catch them from behind. But I think I'm wrong at this point. Obviously, yeah. I am, because Force India just keep notching, you know, good finishes. I mean, Hulkenberg also said a couple of races ago, we should always be finishing the points every race. And pretty much since then, that's exactly what's happened.
The
McLaren guys stayed out quite a long time on that stint of tires, and Alonso was a sitting duck. Pretty much, and that helped Perez get up there. But not sure what happened to his start. But yeah, Hulk had a good race. I mean, You know, seventh place is pretty darn good.
Yeah, it was a quiet race, but a great points result for him. Renault Sport F1, Julian Palmer P19, Kevin Magnussen in P16. Palmer managed to find Felipe Massa at the start to collide with, and then this meant a couple trips to the pits for damage inspection, and then he had to eventually change his nose cone, his front nose, or his front wing. And it's a shame, because Palmer had a really good start. He was up to 10th at the beginning, if you can believe that. Had a great start, was looking pretty good. K-Mags, conversely, he was on a two-stopper strategy, which was clearly slower, and it spent most of the day sort of engaged in battles with Haas F1 and Toro Rosso, but then really started to fade late on that two-stop strategy and dropped back to 16th. So, I feel like it should have... Because there were moments I felt like, well, you know, Renault's looking kind of racy this weekend, you know. And I thought they were going to do a little better than this, Paul.
Yeah, they definitely showed a couple of spikes. And oddly enough, Julian Palmer's been the spike right now.
Yeah, right.
He's never been able to fulfill that into a finishing position, because he was nearly in the points in Hungary as well. So, yeah, great start by him. But unfortunately, you start messing with Massa and things are really going to come unglued at that point, right? pretty tough deal.
We were all thinking it. We're all thinking it. You know, you just said it, Paul. I agree. You start messing with Massa, you know, then you get back to the pits with a...
It's a shit box.
You know.
Yeah, I'd be a little worried. I mean, as I've said before about Palmer, it's like no one really expects much from him. No one's like saying this is the next wonderkind, you know. But it's his chance to dispel everybody and show everybody what he is, but it's just not happening.
It's
painful. And during these long breaks during the summer, I would be a little nervous if I was him.
Yeah, I would too. I totally would too. Toro Rosso, Carlos Sainz, P14, Daniel Cafiet. Where did Daniel finish? He finished down at 15. Boy, could this kid be any more down this weekend, Paul?
Holy crap. Did you see that interview with...
Oh, I saw that interview. I was gutted.
With Will Buxton. I mean, I'm like, someone stay up with him all night long. I think he's not going to make it through the night. I mean,
seriously, at this point, I was thinking he's on suicide watch. I mean, this poor kid. I'm not joking here. I felt really bad for him. I mean, you know, Will walked up to him, and Will wasn't being harsh with him at all. I mean, Will asked, you know, just very good questions, and I think it touched even Will. I thought Will probably caught him off guard a little bit, but Daniel was just like, yeah, I'm just doing terrible, and everything's falling apart for me. He was just very candid. And you know what? I can appreciate that. I can. I don't think it's weakness in Daniel. I think he's had a very, very difficult career in Formula One, which started off very good. He was the only guy who'd given Red Bull a podium in the early part of the season. And just things started to collapse for him. And I think there was a point in time when there was a tremendous amount of pressure that was being applied to him for whatever reason, we don't know. But that sort of begat the collisions with Vettel, the two, you know, when you hit Vettel twice. And then everything from that point just started to unravel. And I'm with you. I felt bad for the guy. I just literally felt gutted for the guy. And I'm with you. I feel like he ought to, you know, reach out to Jackie Stewart or somebody and say, you know, could you coach me through this a little, you know?
Yeah,
brutal.
It is brutal. I mean, he's, you know, he's a very talented guy, and obviously the psychological side is just being destroyed. And we know that the Red Bull organization will eat you up and spit you out in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Like a grinder, yeah.
Exactly, and I think it's true. He was under intense pressure of Red Bull, and once he got dropped down, that's a massive psychological blow. And then Carlos Sainz is, you know, well healed in that team at that point, and he's not going to give Daniel an inch either,
right,
to do anything. So it's but that interview was remarkable, and I really was worried for the guy, and I still am.
Yeah.
That it's like he needs to. He does need to see somebody. I don't know what it is, but I tweeted he needs a little Jackie Stewart love, because I think Jackie Stewart, and spend a weekend go shooting in the Highlands with Jackie Stewart. I think he may be able to sort him out. But
I think he could too. Or Roman Grosjean, you know, he went and found a sports therapist or sports psychologist and praised it, said it did wonders for his career.
Yeah.
And if you're Roman, you know, call Daniel, man. Give him a call and share that number with him, because I kind of felt like, and let's talk about this for a second. Just, you know, for those of you saying, okay, so Kvyat hasn't been winning races and he's not on your radar and he's been running midfield, whatever. But Paul, you've ran racing schools. You've coached and trained a lot of young people in the art of racing.
Mm-hmm.
And just... no one is suggesting here that Daniel Kvyat is the next Lewis Hamilton or multi-champion, but he's a pretty damn tidy driver. When he was on song and when he was running, he had the pace and he was podiums and finishes and he was doing well. I mean, how do you see him as a driver? You rate this kid, don't you?
Yeah, no, I do rate him. I think his problem was consistency. I mean, he would surge to the front, and other days he would be a little lost. And so what that tells you is there is talent in there, but it's not being managed very well, either by himself or by who those around him. He's not being able to get himself into the winning mindset that he just shows sometimes every race.
Mm-hmm.
It's inconsistent in his head. I mean, the psychological side is massive. He's got the talent already. There's a lot of guys there with talent, but it's how do you manage that talent, and how do you not let the psychological side pull you back and make you indecisive and make you make decisions that you shouldn't make, etc. So that's how I see him. I think he's all as good as Carlos Sainz, really, but Carlos maybe has a stronger mind at this point. He didn't seem very worried when Verstappen was there. I think he was pretty strong and confident, and that never wavered, and that's why he's really kind of playing the benefits. So it doesn't mean it's insurmountable and it's not reversible, but it's not going to happen by him doing it on his own.
Let me ask you a question then, Paul. How or can you come back from hitting Vettel twice, taking him out of the race and getting demoted, and losing your seat to an 18-year-old, how do you come back from that mentally?
I don't know. I mean, but you just have to have a strong belief in yourself, and you have to dispel the ups and downs as much. You know, you can't get too excited about the ups, and you can't let the downs really affect you as much. We hear that all the time. You know, I'm a big hockey fan, and you hear that in hockey, and the goalies, you know, a racing driver is very similar to a hockey goalie. I think it's a complete psychological game, and you can get on a roll, but you can't let, you know, one bad game affect your thoughts on your ability. And that's why a lot of, you know, F1 drivers don't have those people by the side of them for the most part. That's the difference between racing, car racing, and a lot of other sports that really do lean on psychologists and trainers and everything. And Formula One drivers is just kind of like the lone bastion where you figure it out yourself, and all you really need is an engineer to set the car up right, and you're going to win every race. But there is a psychological side to it that if you're the only one analyzing yourself, you know how great that works out, right?
Yeah,
so you
really
need a voice from the outside, a voice of reason, and one that can kind of look from the outside and see what's happening and maybe bring someone back before they get down too far, a road that is really tough to come back from, which is where Daniel is right now.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, man. I feel bad for him. I really do. Let's talk about Haas F1. Roman Grosjean, P13. Esteban Gutierrez in P11. The Goot was the only driver to start with the soft tire, and he dropped like a stone at the start as he fell seven places back, and then fought with his teammate for much of the race. But he did manage a series of good passes, including he garnered the ire of Daniel Ricciardo and the blue flag drama. But Gutierrez had a pretty good race. He fought back to P11, having fallen, what did I say, seven places? Yeah.
Yeah.
And not a bad race for him. You talk about pressure. I think this is a kid that's got a lot of pressure on him right now. Romain Grosjean, he had basically a recovery drive. He had that gearbox penalty, started way back there, managed to come back up through the field, not in the points though, and he didn't really look like a points contender all day, but he did manage to finish in P13. But yeah, it must be said, Gutierrez had a good race, and this is two races though on the trot that he's been heavily criticized and even flipped off by Lewis Hamilton on the blue flag issue.
Yeah, well, you know, who hasn't been flipped off by Lewis Hamilton at some point?
But, yeah.
Yeah, but I think Gutierrez is coming on pretty strong right now. I mean, he had a good weekend in Hungary, really, competitive-wise, and he qualified just outside of getting out in the Q3.
Right.
And, you know, he ended up finishing where he started in the end. You know, blue flags be damned, you know, it's like, I think these guys need to stop whining just a little bit about this stuff. You know.
About you're getting tired of hearing the...
Yeah, but they were with traffic. They were in the way. All the people. They were all backing off. That's a real bummer.
Yeah, that stuff.
Yeah, it's a real bummer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one thing to get you know, this guy's fighting to try and get into the top 10 and score his first points. And any time he backs off in the wrong place and, you know, you can lose a lot of time or you can use no time or little time, depending on where you allow someone to go by you. And I'm sure that's exactly what Gutierrez is doing. I mean, and that's I fine. You know, there's plenty of places to pass on this track that if Ricciardo, and I understand his frustration, but if Ricciardo had to wait three turns, he had to wait three turns, and that's it. And Gutierrez is fighting for everything, you know, his career, his points, his team, just as much as Daniel is. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least he wasn't fighting Max Verstappen.
Yes, the young Dutchman was a bit annoying out there today.
Uh-huh. Yep, the plucky teen on the podium. Hey, what was the deal with Ricciardo drinking champagne from his shoe?
That was interesting, wasn't it? I guess that's usually reserved for a win, but then Daniel Ricciardo is some Australian deal. But I guess the Australian kid that won the MotoGP race did it the other week, and he felt obliged to repeat that because he wasn't sure he was going to win a race this year. So maybe second on the podium was as close as he was thinking he was going to get. So he figured he had to try it.
All the hoons down there do that, I guess.
Evidently.
Yeah, who knew? Speaking of hooning, Williams F1, Felipe Massa, DNF, Valtteri Bottas, P9. Massa's troubles really started with that collision I mentioned earlier with Julian Palmer at the beginning, and then he said there was something not right with the car. They pitted, had a slow stop as they took pictures of the left rear wheel assembly and hub, and... then ended up retiring the car on lap 36. Bottas managed another P9 place finish on a two-stop strategy, and he lost two positions because of that gamble, that two-stop strategy, and finished in the top 10 in P9. Paul, you know, when you have a bump in a car like that, and visually the team looks at it as you come in to change tires, you know, it looks right, but you get back out on track and Massa can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Smedley, and I think even at the live broadcast at NBC, you know, Steve said, hey, you know, you can look at all the telemetry and you can do all that. But if the driver goes out and says, no, something's not right and I can feel it, you got to retire the car. So that's what they did, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, anything can get knocked out that isn't visually accessible during a pit stop, certainly when they're taking pictures, and it could be just as easy as, you know, the rear got knocked out of tow or something so far that, you know, just made it spooky out there. I mean, there's a lot of details going into setting up a Grand Prix car, so you knock it some kind of alignment out, it can be kind of shocking what the differences are.
So Paul, what would it feel like for those of us that don't drive at home if you were driving down, your left rear was knocked out of tow? What typically would the car do in that situation?
Well, Well, it depends on what it, you know, if it got so that it was towing out or towing in, you know, mm-hmm. that would different. So basically it would normally be, obviously if it's towing out on the right, left rear, you said,
mm-hmm.
You know, you turn into the right hand as the car would get really loose. And then vice versa on through the, left handers. So it just depends where the toe was knocked.
Right. In okay.
or out. Yeah. But it usually is very, very apparent. And even though visually it's not very, you know, glaring.
Yeah, sure.
It can make seconds of difference.
It doesn't sound like it's very confidence inspiring.
No. And the point is, you know, you're fighting a losing battle. You know, it's not right. And you know, no matter what you do, you can't fix what's wrong with the car in the rear. So yeah, you may as well save your own motor and call it a day.
Got it. Okay. All right. Let's talk about McLaren.
Nice, Ron.
Jensen Button P8, Fernando Alonso P12. Button and Alonso ran a strong race, I thought, in the points for most of the day. But intriguingly, both of them were complaining of having to do serious fuel saving all day long. And Paul, you mentioned it earlier about fuel, lift, coast, tire strategy and trying to save the tires. But McLaren were definitely wooing their need to save fuel. Makes you wonder if that Honda Ice isn't a little more thirsty than the other engines out there.
Yeah, I mean, well, Jensen was definitely saying, he said, as usual, I was saving fuel from the beginning.
Yeah,
And it's so apparent on that. I mean, that seems to be, if they've got the pace, which they seem to be gaining right now because they're qualifying positions, they are seriously behind on their fuel economy and their power. So, you know, because of how much they were lifting off. I mean, they literally looked like they were doing a pace lap at some point in and this is near the end of the race where they're fighting for points, right?
Yeah, right.
Normally where you should be just pushing this hard on the ragged edge, but unfortunately in the rules package we have right now, that is not part of Formula One.
No, it's not. And then JB did get around Bottas for eighth, and he had the pace to do that. So it was a great finish for him up in P8. Alonso was looking good for P10 until he started fading quickly at the end. And then he lost out to Perez and Gutierrez and ends up down in P12. I thought he was going to hang in there. And did you catch that radio from Alonso back to his team who had that slow stop and cost him a position or two? And then they radio him. He says, well, it doesn't really matter. I'll just lose it in the pits again anyway.
Yeah, wow.
Zing!
Yeah,
no, that's... seriously, don't mince words, Fernando. How do you really feel?
I'd like to thank the crew and all the people at home for everything they did. But yeah, that's pretty big slag right there. That sees the inside the real Alonso, I think, at that point.
Yeah, I think he should just do what we do.
Nice, Ron.
And just leave it at that.
Yeah.
That was brutal. All right, Paul. That's not how they finished, but that's what we think about how they finished in random order. So we always hand out a few awards though. And the first award of the Race Review Podcast is Pass of the Race.
We'll do it live!
You're digging that, aren't you?
Always.
That's awesome, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. My pass of the race, Paul, I went with Perez on Alonso at the end.
Mm. Oh, yes.
That was a good
pass. You needed it. Although Alonso was, you know, driving on twigs at that point.
He was a sitting duck.
Yeah, he was too busy flipping off his team as he went by every lap. It was bad intention.
Right, complaining of blue flags.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my... Who did you pick?
You, Alonso.
Yeah, right.
Not, yeah, yeah.
Who did you pick?
I had one. I was going to pick NASA, but then after our discussions on Verstappen, I'm going to go with Verstappen at turn one there at the beginning. I mean, you got to get by Rosberg and around the outside of your teammate without incurring a horrible.
Yeah.
See, I think it's a pretty good move. I mean, heads up, man. The start is where your reactions come into play massively, and his instincts are very nice.
Yes. And very adventurous.
Yes.
I liked it when I put in the editorial I wrote about Lewis, who was saying, I was quickest. And I said, meanwhile, you know, Lewis is a little grumpy over there about not getting pole. Meanwhile, the 18-year-old said, when asked about, well, how he'll defend against Ferrari, he goes, we're not going to defend. We're going to attack. Yeah. It's like, damn, boy. That's awesome. So anyway, all right. Well, the next award happens to be Donkey of the Race. All right, Paul. I have a sneaking suspicion we may have the same person for this.
We may do. And I often sometimes confer with people, unlike the Formula One drivers, as to my decisions for the future. So I was conferring with my friend Rex McDaniel, and he actually thought this person actually should have the double Donkey Award. Mm. But then I told him that was something that happens in Mexico that isn't appropriate for a podcast. So we're just going to stick with the single Donkey Award. And I'm going to go with Nico Rosberg.
But that's who I gave it to.
What a shock.
Wow, I can't believe you chose the same person as I did. You wow. He must have really done poorly.
Yes.
Wow, Nico. How to blow a championship and then how to blow a comeback. That was brutal, man.
Very, very brutal.
Just brutal. You know, he doesn't need my scorn. Anyway, yeah, that's who I picked. What do you know? Anyway, all right. The last award is always Drive of the Race.
I'm a politician. I tell you what, you want to earn some money on him.
You know, and until the last lap, you never know what can happen. I've tried to stay with him, but he was really flying, and I couldn't stay with him.
3 years with him, and if he ever sing again, I don't know how I can beat this guy.
And you know, Paul, that first voice is that of one Mr. Ecclestone. Update on his mother-in-law, who's younger than he is. She has been rescued.
Oh, my God. Fantastic.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
So I did not hear that. Okay.
Yeah. So apparently his mother-in-law, his wife, his wife's mother, who lives in Brazil, she's Brazilian, and she was kidnapped. And they were asking for £28 million as ransom. And apparently Bernie worked with local police and authorities, and they were able to rescue his mother-in-law with and didn't pay the ransom or anything like that. So what great news that is.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's probably brutal. Funded the Brazilian police department for the next few years to make that happen. Yeah.
Right. You gave him paddock club passes for the next race.
There you go.
That's
it. That is good, because it can be pretty dodgy there in Brazil.
Yeah. So that's really good news. Drive of the race, Paul. I don't think we'll have. We may have the same person. Who'd you have? Drive of the race.
Jenson Button.
Whoa, we so do not have the same person.
I really about what. I like JB. I think he's doing a great job. I think that both of them are still really handcuffed by the car, and seeing them in car, how much they have to baby that car right now, but still getting a result like eighth place, I think is phenomenal. I mean, I think those guys are getting paid a lot of money, but they're earning their money by scoring any points at all right now.
Right.
Obviously, we're not really thinking Jenson may not be at that team next year, but he's still driving impeccably well. And I think the surge at the end there, you know, when his tires were, I think, wasn't he on the same tire strategy as Alonso? Was he on about the same age tire, I think?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
But he managed them so much better and still had pace and he chased Bottas down. And I love that about it. And,
you know, the people talk about, you know, gosh, where's Jenson going to go? And is he going to be at McLaren and all that? And I've always been a huge JB fan. I like him. One thing I like about JB is his racecraft, his ability to have car sympathy, his changeable conditions, driving skills. There's just a lot to like about JB. There really is. But I keep thinking, Paul, he could be lethal in WEC as an Audi driver.
Oh, no, he would be a fantastic endurance driver. I just don't think he's finished with Formula One.
I don't think he wants to be done with Formula One. And to be honest, it would be a shame if he did end. Because I still want to see him in Formula One. I really do. And I think he's got a lot to give. But if he doesn't, man, he would be brutal in WEC.
Yeah, he will be exceptional in that, as you said, because of the brains behind the eyes, you know. But from interviews I've heard with him recently, you know, he's really chomping on the bit for the new car. He really wants to drive the new rule car because it seems a bit more up his alley. And hopefully, you know, I think all these drivers are hoping that the rules change so much that they don't have to baby these cars and they can really wring their neck a little bit harder.
That's what they all want to do, you know, when you ask them. They all want to go 10 tenths, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for this podcast. That's what we think about the race, the German Grand Prix. And until we come back, gosh, we've got a big summer break. So you know what that means.
Grace!
Going to have Grace back, huh? So, hopefully I can find her for next week. But in the meantime, stop by the website, formulaoneblog.com, the word formula, the numeral one, blog.com. Share your opinions. Just engage with decorum and civility. That's the only rule we have there. That means no personal attacks. You don't agree with somebody or me or Paul or whoever, that's perfectly fine. But just leave the personal attacks out of it, all right? We still have decorum and civility in this world, and it happens to be at our website. Also, you can go over to the forum, start your own topics, your own discussions. Monday night, 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, hashtag F1 chat on Twitter. Lauren and Tom, our own motorsport monk, manage that, and they do a fabulous job. So check that out on Twitter on Monday nights. And if you like the podcast, go over and give us a good rating. And I have a big thank you to those of you that have donated to the website, because we're not monetized, folks. And so every donation is a huge help. And a couple of you have chosen to sign up for donating on a monthly basis, where every month it just donates automatically. And we couldn't be more grateful for that. So thank you so, so, so much for doing that, folks. Really appreciate it. And it does help. And it goes a long way to pay for the servers, as our traffic has ballooned over the years. So thanks for doing that. Paul, it is awesome to have you on and reviewing the races. And I know I've really asked a lot of you with this compressed calendar here in Formula One, but you've been you've done a yeoman's job. You've been a real champ about it.
Well, you know, not as much as you, obviously. My 2 hours a week is a lot different from your 40 hours a week you spend on it.
Yeah, well, true.
More than welcome, yeah.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And you have, like Lewis, you deserve a summer break here. So you get Coco and Roscoe, and you go have a summer break. And then
got to go hang out with my family and friends and, you know, very big stars, a big, big events, you know.
Absolutely. That's good. And I'll continue my job hunt. So there you have it. Woo! Sounds fun. So anyway, that does it. We'll be back next week if I can find Grace to do it all over again. And until that time, this is Todd, a.k.a. Negative Camber, saying so long.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
Racing it.
Yeah, there are teats involved. Well, there's always teats involved.
Well, good. Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Anything worthwhile's got to have a teat here.
It's got to have a teat there. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, what's worth doing in life if it doesn't have a teat involved?